Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports, and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Hit us up, save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Been getting a ton of questions, so I got to thank you guys once again for listening to the show, commenting on some of the conversations that we're having, whether it's tweeting at us or sending us text messages or voicemails. Continue to do that. We love it all offseason long and into the brand new season this year. So 331-979-1369 is your line to text and call us. Matt, what's going on? I know we had a little bit of a technical difficulty yesterday. I'm kind of disappointed. We didn't get to dive into the Western Conference, the first game of the Golden State game, and the back and forth between them and the Pelicans. But did you enjoy that game at all? I guess if we're going to give the highlights for our fans here, did you enjoy that game at all? And how about last night's game of the Utah Jazz pulling off that win against the Rockets at home?
Yeah, it's great to have Steph back, right? The NBA playoffs aren't the NBA playoffs if you don't have Steph Curry. And he looked exactly like himself coming off the bench and pouring in, 28 points off the bench, including some of his patented threes from the middle of nowhere. It was a fun game. It was a close game throughout, and it just kind of, because it was a close game and the Pelicans gave basically their best effort, you know, outside of a Anthony Davis 50-point, you know, barrage, they had everybody, all of their starters in double figures, all their starters played well. Rondo had like a triple-double. Jrue Holiday had a great game. Nico brushed off a slow start and ended up with like 17 or 18. Everybody on that Pelican starting five played well, and it didn't matter because Steph was back and Draymond had a great game and KD had his usual game. Even though Klay Thompson had an off night shooting, it didn't even matter. It would be nice to see the Pels get a win in this series. I don't know if they can, but I was thinking the same thing about Utah and Houston, and what a great game that was last night. It's, we got a series. I don't know anybody was banking on Utah going in and stealing one in Houston in the first two games, but Houston made their comeback, and you thought, all right, well, this is just going to be like OKC's comeback against Utah. Utah's going to collapse. But Utah responded to the Rockets' comeback, maintained their composure, and Donovan Mitchell fought through a pretty ugly game to make some big plays down the stretch. Joe Ingles, I don't know why the Rockets, after watching that OKC series, still think that you don't have to guard Joe Ingles at the perimeter, because they left him open time and again. He made him pay. I think he set a Jazz franchise playoff record with his 7 three-pointers. So we got some fun stuff going on in the Western Conference series. I hope that the Pelicans don't get swept, but at least this Rockets-Jazz series looks like it's far from over.
Yeah, I think the one thing you said about Joe Ingles, too, which just blows my mind, it's like this entire playoffs, people just decide not to guard him on the perimeter. Like, what are we doing here? Another thing, too, I caught was Clint Capella, man. I can't see a scenario, unless LeBron is going to sign with Houston for a multi-year contract,
you can't like Houston can't afford to get rid of him, like let him walk to another team for big time money. Dude's 23 years old and he's arguably one of the best centers in the NBA. Now, people can argue with me about top 5, top 7, top 10. Let's just be honest with that Rockets team and how young and athletic he is. He's been phenomenal as well. Him and James Harden and Chris Paul too. But how about Chris Paul pulling a classic Chris Paul playoffs? Late in that game, turns over the ball. Like what? 10, 12, 15 seconds left in the game, and he turns over the ball at a crucial point, too. It's going to be very interesting. Donovan Mitchell has been unstoppable, unreal, and a phenomenal story for this Utah Jazz team. And we saw a couple things happen in that OKC series where I thought, you know, Houston wasn't going to have the easiest road trying to come in here and knock this Utah Jazz team off. And especially without Ricky Rubio, you got to give the Utah Jazz a lot of props. I think Dante Exum, the role that he was able to step into. And
yeah,
I know,
and like, how about Alec Burks last night? He had a hell of a game too.
And those are two guys that, like, at the trade deadline, we were talking about, like, if the Utah Jazz wanted Nico Mirotic, like, those were the type of guys that they were probably going to be willing to trade. I was very shocked that Dante Exum came in and played as well as he did, stepping into that role. You know, he's kind of struggled. He's battled some injuries, but you touched on it too as well. And Donovan Mitchell said it in his post game too, after the first game, and even after that OKC series when Alec Burks had to come in late in the game and step up and be a vital role player, and he did just that. So the Utah Jazz have a lot of players on their team stepping up and willing to just buy into what this team is trying to do, and they're giving the Houston Rockets everything they can handle in this series.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that we've learned through the first two games of both of those Western Conference semis is that regardless of the regular season records, the Warriors are still the team to beat. Across the league, the Warriors are still the team to beat. Houston looked great. The Warriors suffered through a regular season that was, you know, hampered by various injuries to key players. But it looks like the Warriors, for the most part, are getting healthy at the perfect time. And we were reminded in that game two loss last night that the two best players and the two most important players on that Rockets team, Chris Paul and James Harden, have a tendency to be mentally weak and come up short in big playoff moments. We got another example of that last night. And I don't care how many threes you hit, and I don't care how many regular season games you won. Right now, it looks like the Warriors wouldn't even have a whole lot of trouble taking care of this Rockets team that might have a lot of trouble against a Utah Jazz team, which, no disrespect to them, is not one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, when you're the Houston Rockets and you shoot 25% in the fourth quarter, like, that's not going to get it done. That's not getting it done against the Utah Jazz, let alone the Golden State Warriors. And I thought the Utah Jazz last night in particular did a really nice job of keeping the Houston Rockets away from that perimeter, making them play through Clint Capella, making them drive to the basket. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting, but I agree with you as well. If you're going up against Golden State, are you looking even past this series? Like, I don't see how the Houston Rockets can shoot 25, below 25% and not play to their game of shooting threes and keeping up in the fourth quarter and stay around and be able to hang around with the Warriors in a Western Conference Finals if that ends up happening. One other question real quick before we get to some Bulls stuff here on Locked On Bulls, Matt. I want to ask you a question because it came across Twitter and I was very interested. So personally, I was never at a game where I can remember Michael Jordan playing at the United Center or at the old Chicago Stadium. But maybe I want to ask some of the older fans out there, because a question was brought up about Steph Curry, his return to Oracle, and how the place's energy just completely changed. Now, I've never seen Steph either at Oracle, so maybe there are some fans out there that are listening right now that have experienced both and can be our sort of firsthand look at this. But do you agree with the statement that there's been no other player that can change the energy in a basketball game and make it as loud and crazy as Steph did at Oracle? Or should people slow their roll a little bit and talk to some people that have experienced Michael Jordan firsthand live in the playoffs, or some of these other stars too back in the 90s, the 80s, the 90s, and even the early 2000s? What do you think about that statement? I don't know if you've ever seen Steph or ever went to Oracle before, but for those fans out there that have, give me a little bit of the lowdown. What you guys think in terms of that? Because it's a hard time for me to believe that LeBron James or Michael Jordan stepping up in a crucial role, making a comeback, can't change the energy the way Steph did in Oracle.
I mean, if you want to say that there isn't anybody in the NBA right now who can get an arena and a crowd jacked up as much as Steph, I don't have any problem with that. Clearly, everybody at Oracle was jacked to get their one of their two MVPs back, who they were missing the entirety of their first round playoff series and a couple of weeks to finish out the regular season. And there is no denying that it doesn't matter if Steph is playing at home or on the road. Right now in the NBA, he is one of the players that people pay to go see. You know, I went to Bulls Warriors at the UC this season because in the handful of games that I went to, that was definitely one of the ones circled on my calendar because it's the Warriors and you get to see Steph and Kevin Durant. Same thing with Cleveland. You pay big bucks to go see LeBron James, whether it's in Cleveland or there on the road. Michael Jordan was the exact same way back when he owned the league. And I think, personally, having gone and seen Michael Jordan in person several times throughout his career, and, you know, I could never thank my lucky stars enough that, you know, the planets aligned and that works out, because we'll never see another Michael Jordan. Every time I was at the United Center watching Michael Jordan, the introductions, the place was insanely, deafeningly loud. I went to several Bulls playoff games in the Jordan era, and that deafeningly loud volume got kicked up an even higher notch. Close games in the fourth quarter during timeouts when they're trying to do like the whole let's see how loud we can get it in here kind of stuff, they still do that stuff in today's United Center games. And it's loud, but nothing like I remember as a kid. I mean, you couldn't even hear yourself think it was so loud in there. And 99% of that was, we're about to see Michael Jordan do something special. And we are all beside ourselves with excitement. So let's get as loud as we possibly can. Is Steph Curry one of those players in today's NBA? Yes, absolutely. Is anybody in today's NBA above Michael in the ranking of how loud does this place get and how jacked are these people to see this one player play? No, nobody. Michael Jordan was a show in and of himself.
You summed it up almost perfectly for me. And I wonder if a factor two plays in to the actual stadium. Like, you know, there are certain stadiums in professional sports that just sound better. You know, the way that they're able to capture sound and keep it inside of an arena. Obviously, basketball and the NHL. And I mean, even in some NFL stadiums, you're still able to do that. The capacity too plays a factor. But I know our friend Nick Friedel said if you've never caught a game before the Warriors leave Oracle, that should be on your bucket list as an all-time NBA fan. So I wonder if that has to play a factor into it too. But I think this is what millennials are getting a taste of. Like, this is our... outside of LeBron, this is really millennials and even past millennials, the new generation's version of how crazy and how ecstatic fans can get over one single player in a league. But if you want to tell, like, I would like to know from fans that have experienced games before, have seen stars play at home, especially in high pressure situations, high pressure games. If you want to tell us about that, what you think about this, hit us up at 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear these stories, especially about Michael Jordan just in his prime, whether it was in playoff games or if you were lucky enough to be at a finals game, or maybe even some other stars, LeBron James at the time, or even Allen Iverson was a show. Anybody that you can think of that might be relating to the way Steph Curry is able to just pump up a crowd and re-energize like no other player maybe ever in the NBA or in professional sports. We have to take a quick short break here. When we come back, we've got season reviews for the Bulls. We're going to start off with three players. We're going to be doing this leading up to the NBA lottery, and then after the NBA lottery, we'll have all of your NBA combine, your draft analysis, talk leading up to the NBA draft this summer. So stick with us here on Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. All right, after a few weeks of just kind of digesting the entire season as a Chicago Bulls fan, year one in this rebuild, just being able to sit back, digest the entire seasons, the highs, the lows, the storylines, and everything in between, we wanted to sit down and take the opportunity just to evaluate each player on this roster season, maybe what they're going to do going forward, if they're going to stay with the Bulls, and sort of what their projected outlook looks for 2018 and 2019. We've got a full recap, full write-ups, and Matt has done the first three for us over at LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports. So if you want to read the full in-depth coverage or you need something to reference back to when we're talking about free agency, head over to LockedOnBulls.com or FanRagSports.com as well. So, Matt, you hit on Paul Zipser, Noah Vonleh, and Cristiano Felicio. I'm going to let you start with whoever you want to start with. Let's just kind of talk about their situation this season and maybe what their outlook looks for next season and whether or not we should keep them around, whether or not they're a part of this team moving forward, part of this rebuild moving forward. So who do you want to start with, Felicio, Zipser, or Noah Vonleh?
Let's touch on Vonleh real quick because I think he's the simplest of the three. And I think he's the simplest because, and you and I have touched on this before, talking about Vonleh since he's been here and where he projects to be moving forward. He showed us some nice things when the Bulls picked him up in that deadline trade with Portland, basically getting a flyer on him and getting some cash to help Portland get below their luxury cap line. He is young. I know he's one of your IU boys. I know you like him. You're high on him. You see his NBA potential. I think he could be a good player in the NBA. We saw his ability to recognize mismatches and be effective in the post, scoring the ball. And we also saw him be a very active guy on the glass, a strong rebounder. That being said, I don't see the Bulls matching or tending him his $4.3 million qualifying offer because there's just really not a spot for him. The power forward is the most concrete spot that the Bulls have on their roster right now in Markkanen and Bobby Portis. And the big to-do list thing this offseason is getting Zach LaVine signed. And then next to that, I think the Bulls really want to bring back David Nwaba, and they'll have to figure out how to get him on board. Beyond that, I just don't see them bringing back Vonleh as a big priority. I think they were probably impressed with what they saw from him, but based on what this Bulls roster has right now, and especially if they add another big in this draft, keeping Vonleh just doesn't really seem to be in the cards.
It's hard for me to agree with you there because think about the qualifying offer Noah Vonleh has this season, $4.7 million. I don't feel like he's going to be a high priority on anybody's NBA. Like, if they're free agent wish list, I don't see him being high on anybody's list. And if you're talking about just bringing players back to just evaluate them even more than maybe what the Bulls got to look at him this summer, I mean, it's hard pressed to. I can understand if he's going to go out and get a multi-year contract upwards of like 7, 8, 9, 10 million. I'm cool with being out on him. But if there's no real interest out there in $4.7 million and say, you know what, let's run it back for another season, see what we've got going. I think the only thing like you're talking about too is the sort of congestion and not really a good situation in the Bulls front court really at this moment. You've got, if Felicio wasn't locked up the way he is for another 3 seasons at $8 million a year, I think this is a no-brainer bringing him back, trying to run maybe a small ball second unit. But you've got him, you've got Robin Lopez, and who knows what they do in the draft too as well. So if you're trying to play like a small ball lineup where Noah Vonleh's playing the 4 and you move Portis to the 5 or you move Markkanen at times to the 5, like that could work. But I feel like you said, it's pretty congested in terms of guys in their front court and really the opportunities there. And I think this has been Noah Vonleh's problem with other teams as well. He was drafted with the Charlotte Hornets, had sort of a problem sticking there. They traded him over to Portland, and Portland had a logjam too where he wasn't getting consistent minutes. Here's one thing in terms of stats for Noah Vonleh this season. The best games he played in terms of double figures in points and double figures in rebounds, 6 of those 7 games, if you stack up all of his games, came with the Bulls. He scored in double figures 4 out of the 5 times this season with the Bulls. He only scored in double figures 5 times. But he had some really nice games at the end of the stretch here. Like March 29th, he had 14 points and 13 rebounds in 30 minutes of play. He had 18 rebounds with Portland back in November, 18 rebounds and 11 points. So he's definitely a high-quality rebounder. If you're looking for a guy that knows how to rebound the damn ball, Noah Vonleh's your guy. I think you're right, though. There's a lot of congestion in the Bulls front court, and if he's going to be interested at all in any other teams in terms of getting multi-year contracts, look, I think they're going to let him walk.
Look, I mean, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter what kind of offers he might get in, you know, testing the waters this summer. It's not like the Bulls aren't going to keep him around because, oh, he signs some, you know, big multi-year deal somewhere else. Even if he doesn't get those offers, even if that doesn't happen, it's just a matter of numbers on the roster. Assuming they sign LaVine, that's 11 guaranteed contracts. If they do re-sign Nwaba as a restricted free agent, that's 12. You add 2 rookies to guaranteed contracts. That's 14, right? That's 14 right there. There's just not a spot. You know, like if the Bulls have one spot of wiggle room, and a lot of times the Bulls like to keep one spot open to, say, take on a bad contract, something that we've talked about, you want them, they want to have that flexibility, and I don't see them valuing Vonleh enough to counteract that. I just don't see it. It doesn't matter. His numbers, impressive. His rebounding, great, wonderful. It doesn't matter what kind of offers he'll get. It's just from the Bulls' perspective, he just doesn't
fit. My question then, what was the point of trading for him?
I mean, we got 2.4, 2.6 million in cash.
Sick. Awesome.
what do you think the Bulls' front office's favorite thing
is? That pisses me off then. Like, why did you trade for him for 20 games and then you're just going to let him walk? Like, I understand the roster, the way the roster shakes out, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But it irritates me at the same time because he's a young athletic player that I think can be a project and be a really good player in what the Bulls are trying to do here. It just pisses me off. I think it's more so the Cristiano Felicio contract, which we can get to. That on top of just the commitment to players that they shouldn't really have a commitment to, I think puts the Bulls in a weird tie. And like you said, with the two first round picks coming in as well, there's not a whole lot of room. So I don't know. I feel like a qualifying contract to bring Noah Vonleh and to skip out on maybe somebody else that the Bulls have that are just they're completely done with, maybe somebody like we're going to talk about again here in Paul Zipser. That could be something we talk about too. But I don't know. I'm frustrated if they do end up letting him walk somewhere else. And at least you don't get to see like what he can do for the Bulls. I understand the front court stuff. It's frustrating that they traded for him and then it was like, all right, here's him for 20 games and then see you, Noah Vonleh.
Yeah. You're allowed to be frustrated. You have a right to be frustrated. I'm just telling you, I would be surprised to see him back next season.
All right. Let's touch on Paul Zipser real fast. What did you think of Paul Zipser's season this year? Obviously, pretty disappointing in terms of what we saw, the flashes that he had in 2016-2017. What's your overall outlook for him this season and in terms of being a Bull in the future?
Yeah, undeniably a disappointing season for Zipser. He actually saw a decrease in his minutes from his rookie year down from, let's see, 19.2 as a rookie to 15.3 minutes per game this season. He had that lingering foot injury towards the tail end of the season that caused him to miss 19 of their final 24 games. But even before that injury, he was a DNP in a lot of games because Fred just didn't really see enough from him to give him a spot in that rotation. And that's saying something because he and Denzel Valentine were really the only two quote-unquote wings that this team had this season. And even before Zach LaVine came back and was healthy and was, you know, put into that rotation, Zipser still wasn't really making a big impact. So he is on a non-guaranteed contract coming into 18-19 for $1.5 million. That contract becomes guaranteed if he is not waived on or before July 18th this summer. I mean, I wouldn't be all that... You know, I wouldn't be all that upset if the Bulls looked at that and said, nah, we're good. Especially if they add a wing in this draft, which Paxson said he's going to do. If they get a solid wing with that top-tier pick of theirs, and you are trying to, you know, it sounds from what Paxson and Hoiberg have both said that they do want to make Denzel Valentine a piece of this team moving forward, have mentioned him by name as a crucial guy for the second unit. They've said that about Valentine. They did not mention Zipser. So to me, I mean, you read the tea leaves, Zipser might be on the outs.
I see. I'm with you there, too. I think the disappointment and the DNPs are a pretty big thing, too, and the inability of being active the last 2 months of the season. I know he battled through an injury, but that's just bad timing for Paul Zipser, somebody who, you know, if he's looking to try and make this roster next year and be somewhat of a future of this, he really needed to play in those last 2 months. That's like basically where everybody was getting a tryout for this Bulls team. But you're right about the did not plays. Like Paul Zipser recorded 5 in the month of January, 9 total with the Bulls this season. And then, like I said, he missed 19 of the last 24 games to finish out the season, did not play a whole lot. So I think I'm with you too here. Like, if the Bulls take one wing, and if they take maybe two in this draft, I think that's even more evident that the Bulls are going to part ways with Paul Zipser. And like, yeah, you could scream and yell about how the Bulls don't have depth at the wing, but at the same time, what's the point of having a guy on your roster if he's just going to DNP every night? Like, the depth there doesn't make any sense. So I think it's pretty disappointing. I don't know if he came into this season out of shape. This isn't the type of system he plays well in. I just have this awful feeling too, and this seems to happen more often than not to the Chicago Bulls especially, is like, you take a guy, he looks like he's got some spurts, he looks like he's got some flashes, he can do something, you let him walk, and now he's going to go play well in another system. That might happen with Paul Zipser, and I think Bulls fans should just be prepared for maybe the possibility of that happening with another team. It's happened more times than not. But for right now, like, he doesn't do anything for me. He doesn't move the needle. And for $2 million to just bring him back to be another body on the roster, I'd rather look other places for that and take a chance on another guy that could turn out to be like a guy like David Nwaba, who they really like, over a guy that, yeah, you drafted in the second round. He had some flashes great in his rookie year, but he didn't look all that good last year. So if you're making a decision on me, if it's me personally, I'm saying, yeah, we're good on Paul Zipser. I'm good on Paul Zipser.
Yeah, and I hope that he does find a home somewhere in the NBA. I think he has some talent, but basically the thing that the Bulls are crucially lacking right now, and Paxson and Gar and everybody is very aware of it, is a athletic 3-and-D wing.
Neither of those.
And Paul Zipser, no, I'm sorry, but not athletic. So you need, and you hope that the Bulls can find that guy in this draft and plug that hole. And it's not, flatly, that guy is not
possible. I'm going to be sad, because if he doesn't come back to the Bulls, I won't be able to play that famous drop of
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
Gar Foreman saying that they're really high on Paul Zipser, who they're really high on. So I'm going to try and get as many of those in the next 2 months before maybe he walks away from this Bulls roster.
Well, let's be real. Gar's really high on
that's
everybody.
That's true, too. All right, maybe let's save Cristiano Felicio for tomorrow's episode. Maybe we can dive into somebody else as well. We're going to be stacking these up as we lead into the NBA lottery and sort of into the NBA draft this summer. But each day we'll kind of break down each person, their season with the Bulls, and maybe an outlook for next season and beyond. This is sort of fun, so we're going to start with a lot of the players. Let's start from the behind roster and move our way up to the more important pieces. But we're going to be doing this for the next couple of weeks. So if you want to give your comments, if you want to throw your ideas about some of these players that we're talking about, the Bulls in terms of this season or moving forward, you can send those on social media at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck. Or hit us up at 331-979-1369. Got to take another short break here. When we come back, we're taking a second portion of mailbag questions. Touched on a couple yesterday in yesterday's episode, but Matt and I are going to attack more of your questions next here on Locked On Bulls.
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, Matt, to finish up the show, touched on a little bit of some mailbag questions from yesterday. Talked a little bit about the Pelicans pick at number 22, who they could look at there, depending on who they take with their actual pick at number 6, and whether or not that moves up or down could change in the next couple of weeks. Touched on a couple prospects that I really liked. Also touched on Melo's situation and how that kind of compared to Dwayne Wade's buyout, and how awkward things could get this summer with Oklahoma City and with Carmelo Anthony and him having to make a decision about his career. And then I finished up about Michael Jordan's legacy and scaring off free agents, top free agents playing in this city, and some of the factors that go in and why the Bulls continue to strike out, and why I think for the most part, if there isn't a huge draw in terms of one of the three core guys that we have in Chris Dunn, Lowry Markkanen, and Zach LaVine, you could even throw the number 6 pick in there as well. There isn't you know, fiery upside, like the way Donovan Mitchell is playing for the Utah Jazz, like pure excitement for free agents. They're going to continue to swing and miss. You know, that's still talking 2 or 3 years down the line, but we talked about MJ's legacy there. Want to take more of your mailbag questions here, though. Remember, 331-979-1369. You can text and leave your voicemails. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com if you got a long form question, or tweet at us at lockedonbulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Matt, let's kick it off with the first question.
All right, Jordan, this one comes to us from Sam in L.A. Sam asks, since the Bulls are scouting wings for their pick, would they be inclined to start that wing, for example, MPJ or Mikal Bridges, or would they let that be an open spot to win in training camp?
It goes without saying, right? Like, if they're going to take a guy that's going to play the three, especially at your number six pick, I would assume he's going to start. Like, who else is going
to
battle for him?
Not if Denzel Valentine has anything to say about it.
Stop it. Oh. I love Denzel Valentine as a player and the way he developed this year, but come on, let's be realistic.
Dude,
here.
He's been chirping about wanting to be a starter, deserving to be a starter in this league.
I love that fighter.
That was what he was talking about when he spoke to the media when his season ended early with that little knee cleanup surgery he had. You have to respect and admire the confidence. But Denzel is not, I mean, so to answer Sam's question, I think Fred will say it's going to be an open battle coming into training camp. I think Dunn, Levine, 1-2, Markkanen, 4, Lopez, 5 are all pretty solidly entrenched right now as 4 of the starting 100%. 5 are pretty much set going into training camp in the fall of 2018. The one position that might not be, where Fred says, hey, whoever earns this, is the wing, where you got Denzel coming into training camp and you probably have one or two wings that you're taking in this draft and say, whoever earns this. Personally, I would like to see if the Bulls do take a wing in this draft, whether it's with their pick or the Pelicans pick, I would like to see that player play well in summer league, come into training camp and earn that starting spot, because I'm more optimistic about the potential of that player being a starting caliber player in the NBA than I am about Denzel. Because no offense to Denzel, I think he could be a good role player off the bench, but I do not want him in the Bulls starting five.
Yeah, and like you said, I like the fire from Denzel Valentine, and like we laughed at him early on last season when he said, like, this Bulls team, their goal is to make the playoffs. Like, he likes to say things like this. I like when guys have that fire and that passion to be able to...
He was chirping after they won the summer league
That's
title.
That's true. He always has that too. Like, nobody can ever take that away from Denzel Valentine, the summer league champs, the Bulls summer league champs. But to be realistic here, but like, okay, yeah, Fred Hoiberg and maybe the front office are going to say this is going to be an open competition coming into training camp. But why the hell would? What would the point of taking a guy number six overall or potentially in the top three and then not start him? On a rebuilding team, like, what?
Are you really incredulously asking that when just last year they took a guy seventh overall and were planning on not starting him and starting Nico Mirotić, and who knows, maybe Bobby Portis was ahead of him in the rotation as well, and the Bulls' hand was forced when one punched the other, one was suspended and one had a broken face and they had no choice but to start Lowry.
But you're literally...
They took Lowry seventh overall and they weren't planning on starting him. So, I mean, like, why would you think any differently one year later?
Sure, you're right. But you're backing up my argument. Like, you're like, that would have been a mistake, right? That would have been a mistake not to start Lowry.
I'm pretty sure Bulls fans everywhere would have rather seen Markkanen start than Nico or Bobby, because he's the rookie that we were all excited about and curious about.
To me, man, like, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, Lowry, Markkanen, whoever this pick is going to be, like, that's supposed to be your core. Like, what are we wasting time having him come off the bench for? Like, let him get
Jordan, I'm not saying if the Bulls take a wing that I want him to come off the bench. I'm just reminding you and reminding everybody out there that the plan wasn't to start the rookie Markkanen, who they took seventh overall. So if they take a wing sixth overall, there's no guarantee that they plan on starting that guy.
Oh, that's so frustrating. It's like, doesn't that irritate you too, though? Like, wouldn't you, idiotic to take a guy at number six.
Especially if the only other option is starting Denzel. Yeah, I'd be real freaking ticked off about that.
Or Justin Holliday. Like,
Bulls fans have to prepare themselves that might be something that happens.
Yeah, you're right. You're definitely right. And so it's not more... it's not more towards you. It's just idiotic in general. Like, to me, it doesn't make any sense. Like, what would the point of putting Justin Holliday out there with Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn to start the season? Like, what's the point? I could see the value in, you know, if Denzel's...
What's the point of paying a 38-year-old Dwayne Wade $50 bajillion?
All right.
If we're going to get into a point argument here.
That's true. Okay. All right. Let's to rein it back in. The most logical explanation here is if they take a wing, like you said, if he plays well in summer league, he shows up to training camp and he's exceptional in training camp, or he's even above average in training camp, I don't see what the point is to just bring him off the bench. Things like that have hurt prospects in the past. I look at what Charlotte did, and then again, it is Charlotte. They're kind of a dumpster fire when you look at them, but maybe Malik Monk wasn't the prospect that we all thought he was going to be, but they did that sort of, let's bring him off the bench, let's play him, let's not play him, kind of screwed around with him, and I don't know if that really helped or hurt him. It seemed like it hurt him this season, so there are cases like that, but the Lowry thing, too, is funny that you bring that up, because that kind of pads our argument here. Is like, it would be idiotic not to start one of your top prospects, one of the guy that you just drafted. You spent a whole season trying to build up your resume in order to get into the lottery to draft a guy like that. To me, like, you're just wasting time at this point. So I understand, like, Fred and the front office and all of them are going to make this a competition, an open competition coming in to training camp, but I would be very surprised to not see the Bulls' number 6 pick in that starting lineup when we get to October.
And before we move on, just to finish this topic, maybe a little bit of relief for Bulls fans, or at least some optimism that they might not screw that up, is that it's slightly different. I bring up Markkanen saying he was 7th overall, but with Bobby and Nico, he had two guys ahead of him that the Bulls still believed were a part of their future and a part of their core.
Absolutely.
And the fight happened, and then they had to deal with that. But there's, other than Denzel, nobody who immediately will say, I deserve this starting spot over this rookie who just came in here. That rookie might come in and hands down look like the best option. And if that's the case, Fred and the front office might collectively say, yeah, we're going to start this kid because he's our best option at the wing. The Bulls may not have believed that yet about Lowry, thinking that Nico and Bobby were ahead of him on the depth chart coming into training camp.
All right, let's get to our next question here. It's talking about players and teams that might try and blow things up, playoff teams that might try to restructure themselves. This is pretty interesting, and I know we've had this conversation a couple different times, but the 312 asks us, what would you think of this trade? Assuming the Bulls draft a big, the Bulls get Otto Porter from Washington with some picks. Bulls get picks since they are taking on a bad contract. First, I'd preface this with Otto Porter, I don't think is really that bad of a contract. He's in year one of his contract, of his 4-year contract? I'm waiting to see.
For the player that he is due $26, $27, and $28.5
million. Okay, that's kind of bad.
In the next 3 seasons. That's a lot of money for
Otto Porter. So you're right. But maybe he needs a change of scenery. Anyway, this question finishes up with, what would you do in order? Would you take on a guy like Otto Porter Jr., and what kind of mix would that look like in a Bulls lineup, and what would the Washington Wizards be willing to give up, and why would they do this? John Wall had made some comments earlier about Washington needing to shape things up in their front court. They needed to upgrade from Marcin Gortat and Jan Mahinmi. Their cap is terrible right now. Like, they owe a lot of different guys and a lot of guys that aren't very good role players a lot of money, like I just said, in Jan Mahinmi, some of these other guys. Like, Otto Porter Jr., the money that you had just said is a lot of money. And think about bringing in also and having to sign Zach LaVine too. Those are two guys that you're going to owe probably upwards of $40, $42, $45 million together combined for the next 3 or 4 years each year. So I don't know. I understand from Washington's perspective of trying to free up some money, maybe to toss money at DeMarcus Cousins or something, but like, I don't think I'm in on that. As much as I still think Otto Porter can be a really good player in this league, spending $45 million on Zach LaVine and Otto Porter Jr., who are both question marks at this point, I don't know if I'm a huge fan of that.
I mean, unless the offer that Washington was throwing at the Bulls of, here's what you get along with taking Otto Porter, was too good to turn down, I really don't see that happening, then I think it's a moot point. I mean, the Wizards, I think you and I have talked on the show before about how we both like Kelly Oubre and think he's a good young player. I don't necessarily see them parting ways with him. When it comes to draft picks, I don't know if the Wizards are in a position to hand out first round draft picks. They do have their own in 2018, both first and second round. But then you start looking at maybe just like chucking in second round picks, which the Bulls have sacrificed a lot of their own. So it would be good for the Bulls to try to get some second round picks back. Washington has 19, 20, and 21 second round picks already going out because of various trades they've made in recent years. So wow. Do you see the Wizards handing over a first round pick in addition to Otto Porter? Because I don't. And I know that the Bulls are talking about having that financial flexibility is something Gar talks about constantly, and they are in position to take on a bad contract this summer, and I wouldn't be opposed to them doing it for the right deal. To me, Otto Porter is not that right deal.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, too. That's too much money expanded out too many years. I think if we're taking on bad contracts, I'd rather them expire. You know, even if you had to deal with an expiring contract after next season, I'm talking about like two seasons from now.
I mean, we're talking about hoping the Bulls take a wing with their first of two first round picks and starting that wing. You right. bring Otto Porter here, all of a sudden, oh, hey, here's our veteran, you know, starting small forward. And good luck sitting on the bench, kid. Have fun. I think it would be contradictory to what the Bulls are trying to accomplish right now.
I think what our texter was saying, too, was this is an idea that Michael Porter Jr. already gets drafted and they pass on. Maybe they don't stretch and take Mikal Bridges and they take somebody like Mohamed Bamba or somebody like Wendell Carter or somebody like Marvin Bagley slips down to them. Somebody that's going to be a big and play the five alongside Lowry. I think that's where he's more aiming at with this text. Even if they threw Kelly Oubre into that deal, I'm still not doing it. Like, that's still 3 years at 26, 28, 29 million that you're going to pay Otto Porter, and then you're going to pay Zach LaVine probably upwards of 18 to 22 million for the next four or 5 years. So,
and say that the Bulls surprise us and actually do have a big, significant uptick in wins in the 2018-19 season and are a borderline playoff team, and Markkanen looks like a rising star, and the Bulls actually at least get some sit downs with some big name free agents in 2019. I'm saying still just a hypothetical, but do you want to be strapped for cash because you took on Otto Porter and not be able to offer those max kind of deals when you could be, as of right now, one of the few teams in the league that have the financial flexibility to do that?
Look, I'm in this situation where I don't think the Wizards have anything that could make this offer juicy enough where the Bulls will take it, and I don't really think the Bulls if Otto Porter was the player to build around, I don't think Washington would give him up, right? Like, if they're trying to just get rid of him, I don't see what he does in terms of the Bulls, and there isn't, like, even throwing Kelly Oubre in some future first round picks, like, or future second round picks into that deal just doesn't do anything for me. And I know we go through these scenarios and we do say a lot more times than not, we say, no, we're not about that. No, that doesn't sound very good. That doesn't sound very advantageous for what the Bulls are trying to do. And we steer the conversation more to what the Bulls should do, like guys that we'd be willing to move. It's just hard to find deals like that. And sometimes there's going to have to be compromise between the Bulls and what could be advantageous and what is the right deal at that point. I don't think Otto Porter's the guy, though, even if you get it sweetened with like a guy like Kelly Oubre or future picks. And I think you're in the same boat as I am. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we agree on that one. All right, last one here, Jordan. I know you're going to love this. This comes from area code 317 on our text line. What are your thoughts on Romeo Langford committing to IU? I'm also an Indiana/Bulls fan, as I live in Indiana. But could you see him being in the Bulls' range in the 2019 draft, assuming he goes one and done? So, Jordan, your thoughts on Romeo Langford committing to your Hoosiers, and are you already eyeing him as a potential Bulls addition, assuming he goes one and done and into the 2019 draft?
Look, this is really cool for Indiana, and for a guy to commit to his hometown school as Hoosiers fans.
He was also considering Kansas and Vandy, isn't that right?
Yeah, and Vanderbilt being because Darius Garland went there and they're really good friends. And what we had a conversation early on, like maybe in the middle of the season, we were talking about how prospects are getting to this point where they're like buddying up with some of their friends, guys that they've met through the Nike EYBL, through AAU, these types of things to try and pair up and play and get as much exposure as possible. It's really cool for Indiana to get Romeo Langford, and their draft their recruiting class is insane next year. I feel like he's going to be put in the spotlight. He's going to be the guy that Indiana's been wanting for a really long time. If he shows out, he's going to be a potential lottery pick. I think it's too early to assume anything, but let me just tell you this about Romeo Langford for people that don't follow the college basketball or the recruiting circuit. People were waiting 2.5 hours outside of high school basketball stadiums, small gyms, to watch this guy play. Like, this guy is the real deal in high school, and he was torching guys. He's an offensive player. He's a defensive player. He's everything you want in a wing. And for me, I'm pretty excited about him. But there's also guys in this draft class coming up that I'm pretty excited about too, like Zion Williamson. There are a few other names, but Romeo Langford, just as an Indiana fan and maybe somebody looking past the 2018 draft, 2019 draft, this guy's going to certainly be in the conversation. And it's going to help the Hoosiers too in terms of credibility in the Big Ten. So there's going to be a lot of exposure for him and some of these top prospects next year. Indiana, obviously being a blue blood school too, gives him a lot of exposure. So you're going to see a ton of him this year. I'm very excited. Indiana hasn't had a five-star recruit since Yogi Ferrell. And that's going all the way back to 2012. This is a guy that they've been talking about on campus through recruiting circles since this kid was 14. Like, I can remember when I was still at school in 2013, he was talked about, you know, oh, this guy's going to be a recruit in 2017, 2016, 2017. It's finally going to be a guy that stays in state. So I got to say, I'm very excited, and I wasn't concerned that he wasn't going to commit to Indiana. It seemed like all along through the tea leaves and fans showing support too at some of these games that he's the real deal. So yes, I'm excited, but I think it's too early to tell about his NBA draft stock.
Yeah, I mean, like, to the question of do you see him falling in the Bulls' window? That's the question here. It's obviously too early to tell because we don't know what he will be, how impressive he will be, or how much of a disappointment he will be compared to being a McDonald's All-American and all of the excitement around a high school level player into what he will do in assuming he's one and done his 1 year with Indiana. That said, you know, ESPN put out a way too early 2019 NBA mock draft like earlier this week, and they had Langford going ahead of the guy you mentioned, Zion Williamson, who's committed to Duke, and Manute Bol's freakishly athletic son, Bol Bol, who's going to Oregon, who is 7'2 and has a wingspan of like 85 feet. I mean, Langford is projected to go above those two guys, which is crazy, but that's, you know, at number five. Langford is slotted at number five in this 2019 NBA mock draft. So obviously way too early to tell. But assuming that Langford's trajectory stays on course and he appears to be a top five, at least top 10 pick, depending on what the Bulls do, if the Bulls and Paxton are, you know, done tanking, finished tanking, and are trying to be competitive and win games next year, there's a very good chance that he'll be off the board by the time the Bulls are picking somewhere in the middle.
And it's funny because there's a lot of mock drafts, and obviously guys go up and down between all of these draft stock. Like, we talked about Marvin Bagley and Michael Porter Jr. and where they were projected, you know, even before their season started in college basketball, and how much movement has been there. You talk about Jaren Jackson Jr., who went from being like a mid-first rounder to now a potentially a top three, top five guy. So there could be a lot of movement. Like, I'm looking at a mock draft for 2019 right now, and it says Romeo Langford going number nine. So now if you're talking about number nine, see, that's more in the Bulls' range. That's where I assume the Bulls are going to be. I don't think the Bulls are going to be back in the top five, top seven of the lottery next season. So if you're looking for like a late lottery type of pick, this guy might be hanging around Romeo Langford. But like overall, you're talking about the 2019 draft. It's way too early to tell. But yes, I'm very excited. And I know there are a ton of Indiana alum, people that live in Indiana that listen to this show that are also Bulls fans as well. So it's exciting for college basketball. And even if you're a Big Ten fan in general, it's exciting at that point too to get some more guys to be able to watch on a regular basis here in the Midwest. People that you can get sort of comfortable knowing and understanding and sort sort of going to be like the Indiana version of Miles Bridges, Jaren Jackson Jr. in terms of hype, in terms of maybe this guy's going to go in the lottery. And also, too, to just kind of wrap this up, Indiana has a very good track record of getting their players from their program into the NBA and being successful NBA players. You look at Eric Gordon, Victor Oladipo, Cody Zeller, Noah Vonleh, Yogi Ferrell. Troy Williams is still hanging out in the NBA. And there's a couple other guys. Thomas Bryant plays in the G League. James Blackmon Jr. plays in the G League for the 76ers. So there are a lot of guys that have a lot of talent that end up in the NBA circles.
Hoosiers do get a lot of guys to the NBA level. The story here with Langford is that what the state of Indiana, or what the program has struggled to do, is get the state's best high school projects to commit to IU as opposed to other big basketball schools. So that is something that through the past, 20-25 years, IU basketball has really struggled with getting Indiana homegrown prospects to come to IU, and they got a big win there when they got Langford to commit.
So. Like, I can think about like guys like Glenn Robinson III, who decided to go to Michigan instead of playing at Indiana. There's just, I could name off all the guys that were supposed to go to Indiana that did not end up not going there. There's a lot of top prospects that always flirt every year, so it's finally nice to see an actual prospect land, a top 10 prospect land with Indiana. So it will be exciting next year. Remember, all of our mailbag questions, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Leave us your voicemails, your texts there. Hit us up on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. That's going to about do it for us here on Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, in the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to drive you into the weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.